All right, good morning. Thank you for taking your time joining a session on customizing OST. I hope you realize that you have joined a 75-minute session about a text file that we will use Notepad to edit. No. This session is, of course, much more than that, but that ini file is a central core to everything that we will do today. We will have that ini file reach out into databases, into web services, into Config Manager, into Active Directory, into a lot of components where the end result is, all right, we need to apply settings during deployment. For example, a computer name, what OU to put the machine into the Active Directory, what applications that are supposed to be installed, things like that.
And one of the purposes is to be enabled to finally say, is the machine done? And the answer will be, yes, it's actually completely done. Today, most people say, it's almost done. I just need to finish up a small couple of things or item.
And then 2 hours later, it's done.
And then it's done, yeah.
All right. So my name is Johan. This is Michael. We have been in deployment for absolutely too long time now. We're getting old. That's bad.
Yeah, I know you started around 3.5-inch floppies, and I did 5.25s.
No, you did actually 8-inch floppies.
Yeah, I did that too.
Yeah. Because I did 5.25.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, I did.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So that means I'm much younger than
yes,
you are.
Yes, you are. Yeah. I know that.
We love questions. So at any time in the session, just yell them out. Well, raise your hand and yell them out. And you can also post them through Twitter. We are monitoring that hashtag on TweetDeck on this machine over here. So we might not be able to answer them all during the session, but we will make sure to have them answered before we hit the bed tonight and go to sleep. So session code, you put T in front of it, and the hashtag, and then you have So, Microsoft Deployment Toolkit is the deployment solution we use no matter what. If the customer have Config Manager, how many of you are using Config Manager? I would say about 75% in the room, 80 maybe. Then we use it with Config Manager. If the customer does not have Config Manager, we'll use it simply standalone. Everything that we do here today is valid for both those scenarios. So everything we show and demonstrate and the script you will be able to download, we uploaded them already for you, they will work on both scenarios. So just because we don't demo everything in both, it will work in both. All right. So the reason for using MDT is that it's a very enterprise-friendly, well-tested solution. The ADK and Windows Deployment Services and such, these are only foundation pieces that the solutions are using. Same way as Config Manager using these tools in the background and becomes a OSD solution. But they act as a sort of a dynamic layer on top of these core tools that you have. The standalone version is called Light Touch. The Config Manager edition is called Zero Touch, and that has nothing to do with how it really works or how it's really working. Because Light Touch, the standalone solution, by default has a wizard that will prompt your full things. You can automate that fully. It's just depending on the settings you have on your server, on your deployment server. Again, that text file. Config Manager by default does not have a wizard. It's automated by default. But you can add a wizard. So Light Touch can become the same scenario in Config Manager, and Zero Touch and Config Manager can be the same in Light Touch. It's you as admins, technicians, engineers, whatever, IT pros, that decides the level of automation. These are just marketing names. Has nothing to do with the technology behind them. But if someone says Light Touch, they really mean standalone version. If they say Zero Touch, they really mean Config Manager. Simple as that. Now, if I go over to my demo environment, I was number 8. Here we go. One cool thing is that if I open up a command prompt and navigate to this folder here, if I can type, here we go. This is a very simple text file. If you feed this text file into Config Manager, the sequence that you have in Config Manager will actually do what this text file tells it to do. So, for example, if I feed the sequence with this inner file, it will install two applications that you have in Config Manager, and then it will detect whether you have a laptop or a desktop. And if you do have a laptop, it will also install the Cisco VPN client. It will enable BitLocker, and it will put the machine into that OU. If the machine is a desktop, it will disable BitLocker, and it will put the machine to another OU, and it will not install the VPN client. So by having a simple text file, you actually already add dynamic deployment to OSD in Config Manager. With LightTouch, you always have it. But with Config Manager, you get it once you add MDT on top of it. And the cool thing about this, I can actually test this. I can run a simulation in about 10 seconds flat. I will do a deployment, simulated, so that I can go into the log file and review what was going to happen if I deploy this machine. So I was running the gather script, and as you can see here in the beginning, it actually finds out quite much about your hardware. For example, serial number, model, memory, it's a laptop, it's not running UEFI-enabled BIOS, it's not running on battery. And everything that you see here can be added and used as conditions later on in the deployment. And for now, I decided to use this one as a condition. So later in the process, you will see that the sequence actually realized that, okay, it apparently was a laptop. So it will now have three applications to deploy. So you can test all this really quick. Instead of spending an hour deploying something, just to realize that, all right, I was missing an application because I typed something wrong or I had the wrong name of the app or something was broken. Now I can simulate this, and that will save you hours and hours. Yes? Nope. The only thing you need in your... The question was, did I net use and do stuff? You can do that, absolutely, but you don't need to. If I go back to my folder that I have here, the only thing that you need to add is that, and that file together with whatever in the file you would like to test. That's it. So I just copy those four files to a folder. I put my INDE file in that folder, and then, you know, life is good. You can also net use to the share and run it that way. Either way, I just prefer to have it standalone like this. Now, what are the other reasons that you would like to integrate MDT into Config Manager? I mean, if you don't have Config Manager, it's obvious. You need a deployment solution to use MDT, fine. But if you have Config Manager, why integrate? Me and Michael, we did a session on MMS last year where we spent 75 minutes answering that question. Here is the 3-minute version of that session. So I mentioned one thing before. It enables dynamic deployment.
I think we should put a note. How many of you work as a consultant that charged by the hour? Okay. You should not integrate MDT.
I see your point because, unfortunately, for you guys, it will actually help you receive the goal much more quickly than if you were using Config Manager natively. For example, I was talking to one customer. They had spent 4 days, full days, writing scripts that will help them deal with regional settings in Config Manager, because that's something that is not native into Config Manager. And then I said to them, you can download them. Microsoft already written them for you. Well tested, supported. So you just wasted 4 days.
I think the record so far is a guy that actually wanted to have the computer named as the serial number. He spent 2 weeks writing a VB script. And he was really crying when I showed him that you do OSD computer equals percent serial number percent, and then you're done. And go like, oh, I didn't know that. No, he never asked.
This is one way of doing it.
Yeah.
Or you can write a 400-line VB script.
You can do that too.
Anyway, so dynamic deployment is really one of the key features or key enhancements. The other one is that you get an optional database that you can use to store OSD-related stuff in Config Manager. Things like the computer entries with all their settings, roles for settings, locations for location-based settings, and make model-based settings, and I will demonstrate that later on today. But the cool thing is you also get an entire development framework. So if you do want to write something customized, like a script or a PowerShell wrapper or whatever, you get ready-made snippets that you can simply copy and paste and use when you do that integration. If you don't download that integration, you will have to write everything yourself. But I rather steal with pride from someone that is already working and tested and supported than to rewrite everything from scratch on my own. It's all about being efficient when you develop scripts. So you get the full development framework when you have the MDT integration. In addition to this, you get a real-time monitoring, which I think is quite cool. So if I start a deployment on a machine, either Config Manager deployment or a light touch deployment. I will do a light touch deployment now because it's a little bit quicker to kick off for demo purposes. So I'm just booting a machine, a virtual machine on an ISO. I could have Bixby booted as well. There is a trick that you can do in Config Manager as well as the normal plain vanilla Windows deployment services that allow you to pixie boot a boot image in 4 seconds on a Hyper-V box by simply setting the TFTP RAM disk block size to 16K. It will boot in 4 seconds. That's pretty cool. Anyway, I have started a deployment. You can see that WinP4 is booting. It will eventually connect to my deployment share. I will be able to log in. And when I have monitoring enabled, what I will see, well, not on my domain controller, I won't see anything, but on my deployment server, once I log in, that machine will eventually appear here in the monitoring node. So let me wait for it to start. So log in. And I'm going to verify that it started. There we go. Go back to my server. The machine is running. And this is both LightTouch and Config Manager clients that will appear in this list, depending on which deployment I started. And I can, of course, club-click that machine, and I can remote into it from the server, even though it, at this point, is in WinP already. This is only working if you have Dart enabled in your boot image. That's something you can do when you have the MDT integration. You need a license, of course. It's part of MDOP. But once you have it, this is both LightTouch and Config Manager. And I'd rather do this for a remote office than to put myself in a car, drive 200 miles to troubleshoot something. This is easier. You can also see this information, of course, in PowerShell. So I can go to a folder. I need to be an admin, of course. Control-Shift-Enter will give you an admin prompt. Demo, PowerShell. I can use a PowerShell script to see the same information. I can use Excel to see the same information. because Excel 2013 can actually boot and connect to a monitoring feed directly. So I hope you realize what I have been giving you here. I have been giving you a reason to go to your manager and request an 8-inch LED TV that you can put in your office, having Excel opened with the running deployments in your enterprise. All right. So in addition to those four features, there are 276 additional OSD functions, features, call it whatever you like, that are being added. So if I have met a lot of customers saying, I don't want to integrate, I want to use Config Manager as it is because I don't want to add any complexity to my system. That's the same customer who spent weeks and weeks writing custom scripts instead of downloading ready-made, tested, supported scripts. But I haven't met a single customer who, after we have actually demonstrated the power of MDT to them, that haven't changed their mind. So we have 100% success on that part. But we met quite a few who didn't want to have it in the beginning. Now, go back to my slide for a bit. We can do more stuff with this because it all comes down to this ini file. And when that ini file is configured correctly, it will do magic. So as I said before, we will show you how to extend this, how to reach out into other systems. And Michael is actually going to bend the rules for you. It's like Matrix style. You see Neo is going back, dodging bullets. This is
pretty much the same.
Except the dodging and the bullets. Yeah.
And the speed. Trust me, I don't have that speed.
So you were number three? Or possibly number four?
I have no idea.
But there are not too many buttons on this one, so.
Two?
Two?
I have two.
Make a note.
Make a note. I have two. So Johan showed you the nice monitoring feature tool, and you can use PowerShell to get the information from that too. However, most of the blog posts I've seen so far reads that information when you are at the MDT server. Now, you will most likely want to read that information when you're not on the server, and therefore you can use this PowerShell script instead. So this PowerShell script actually do an invoke REST method against the URL, and if you run this script, it will actually give you the monitor data in a grid view instead. So with this script, you can use and read the monitor data from wherever you are. That means you can either use PowerShell natively or you can use Excel to dump the data. If you need to find how to do it in Excel, it's pretty easy. Search for Bunny, Excel, and MDT. That combination should give you that answer. Now, Johan told you that you can modify the custom settings.ini, and yes, you can. These are samples. You can download these samples and play with them on your own. I just want to show you a couple of things that you can do. It's all about dynamic deployment, especially when Microsoft is shifting to faster release cycles. That means upgrading and modifying and changing will be forced to do faster. So we managed to teach people how to not do 45 different images. Now they have one image and 45 different task sequences instead. That really doesn't help when it comes to the migration or upgrade part. So using the dynamic deployment rules means that we most likely can have just a few images and just a few task sequences, and then we control the task sequences externally. Then it becomes much easier to upgrade and migrate and things like that. So, for instance, if you do UDI, you want to provide information to the process. In this case, we have something very simple. We base this on a default rule setting together with a default gateway setting. Default gateway setting is a reserved word, so it exists in MDT. Question over here? You can download them from a very simple site. Just remember Bunny and deployment. Yeah, so search for custom settings.ini. There's a bunch of samples. All of them have one giant giant download for several
kilobytes,
and they contain all this. So it goes to the default gateway, and that means it's going to find the default gateway. So using the gather process, it finds the default gateway, and therefore it knows where we are. Based on the location we are, the UDI wizard will now populate itself with the predefined values. So if you're in Sweden, the user will get the suggestion of having a Swedish keyboard. If you happen to be in Redmond, then you are suggested to have a US keyboard because that's going to be most like to be true. We also have a time zone. We also set the OS local admin password. Now I can use UDI. I can specify you can't change the local password, but it will use the UDI wizard to actually populate it. We also have this, which is kind of fun. Sometimes we hear people saying, I would like to have the computer name based on the serial number. Yes. But I don't want to have the entire serial number. Okay. I just want to have a part of it. Yes. How do I do a script for that? You don't. Because custom-settings.ini is parsed by a VB script. VB script can do calculation. Therefore, you can do calculation directly into a custom-settings.ini. So that is a sample of a VB script calculation that can be done. You can do other things too. That name will result in PC-STH- the 8 leftmost characters from the serial number extracted from the computer as the computer name. So that is one example. We have other examples. This is one that I don't think it's a perfect solution, but I did have a customer that requested this. They really want to have a computer name based on the fact that it is a laptop or a desktop or a virtual machine, and it's located differently. So it's either in one location or the other location. And they want to combine that with a serial number. So how do you do that? Well, it's pretty easy. We need to define that. And that is the definition of the computer name. Name by type, name by location, left serial number, 8 characters. That's the name. Now, name by type and name by location is something I invented. You can see them up here, so they're not in the operating system, or it's not in MDT from the beginning, so we need to add them as custom properties. Then we have the same story, default gateway, and based on location, laptop type, it's going to do subsections. So I said in the settings row, in the priority row, go to the section by laptop type, and it's going to do that. So it's going to read in subsection laptop, which is going to be either true or false. If laptop is true, then it's going to go to the section called laptop true. Therefore, the name will be WLT. Now, if I want to play with this and verify it works, the only thing I need to run is, of course, the gather step. So Johan showed you how to do that. And, of course, I have my own test environment. So I just specify any file. And that is how you specify an init file. Samples. And we want to do based on type and location. Yeah, that's the one. So now we can see it's running. And you can see name by location was NY. Name by type was WDT. Serial number is up here. But we can see that the final result name is going to be WDT-NY-409-042 as the computer name. So it's pretty easy to find this name. Now, I met a customer who says, no, we don't want to have that. And I agree, that's not the smartest name to name a computer. But in this case, this customer wanted this. So working as a consultant, you do what the customer asks. So very simple.
Often.
Yeah, we do have limitations. You could do other things. In this case, it's pretty easy. This one is it's a favorite of mine. This works when you do light touch. It's rather easy. It's going to flip the OS install to no by default, because the default section is actually processed last. which means it's going to run the model first. So it's going to find out if it's a virtual machine or an EliteBook 8540 or an HP Compact 8510. In those scenarios, OS install will be flipped to yes. If you have another model, it's going to be flipped to no, and it's going to prohibit the installation of the operating system. Therefore, this is a way to say, these are the models we support. If you try to install it on something else, we will block the installation. This doesn't work in Configuration Manager. You need to do it differently, but basically you can achieve the same thing.
What you do in Config Manager is you have two options. Either you add a condition to your sequence that says, if this one actually is no, then just abort, just exit.
Yeah.
Or you add it to the Config Manager boot image. So even before you select a sequence, it will actually go ahead and check the hardware. Is this laptop or desktop one of the models that we support in the organization? And if it's not, it just aborts. Just shuts down WinP.
Yeah.
So they try the boot and it shuts down. They try reboot and it shuts down. Until they eventually realize that, okay, I maybe should...
Try again.
It
will disable in a refresh scenario. The only thing you can do is to install applications around the task sequence as soon as it tries to install an operating system. If you, in LightTouch, it will show you the famous or infamous salmon-colored screen.
It's supposed to be red, but it's really another red.
Yeah. So another one is, because we can deploy servers using this too, and in case of the servers, most likely you want to have static IP addresses. You want to configure the network entirely. Not that many people run servers, physical servers, on dynamic IP addresses. So we can specify if that is your MAC address, if that is the model, you should have the following application. If you have that MAC address, please configure the network according to this. Therefore, you can basically, I can design your entire infrastructure in Notepad, send it over to you, and just make sure that you boot the machines in the correct order. It's insane. I have done it once. It worked. It felt very strange. I wasn't even there, but I installed all the servers. So it actually works. So you can do a lot of things. So the power of knowing how custom-settings.ini works, that you can create your own variables and use the variables in the next section, in the next section, in the next section, and combine them into new words is pretty strong. Question over there. So if we go back to the computer type,
I think you need to repeat the question.
Yeah.
What if we have conflicting values? Who is going to win? I just summarized that question.
Did I ever hear? Well, here it is. You mean that one?
Yeah.
Okay, so it's going to read in the model first, which means that it's going to use the model name and try to find a section that has the matching. Well, we have a simple rule that always applies almost. It's called first writer or first value wins. When the value has been set, it's set. If you have another value later on, it will not be overwritten. Now, there are exceptions to that because you can overwrite that value in the task sequence by itself, and in that case, the value will be overwritten. And there are some of the values that has the opposite order. But in this case, OS install don't have that, so that has the first writer wins.
So the priority line basically tells the ini file in what order to read sections. And as Michael said, most of the properties, the first value will win. But you can always go into the sequence and override it. You can always have a script that overrides it, but this is just the behavior of the ini file. There was a few questions in the Twitter feed, where can I find the samples, and I just posted that link that Michael is displaying right now into the feed. I also got a question around, all right, that Pixie stuff you talked about, 4 seconds boot time, I also posted that link into the Twitter feed, so if you go on Twitter and Eagle search for my name, have a quite unique last name, or the session hashtag, you'll find it. All right, so what if we want to do more? What if we want to store some of the information in a database? Well, it turns out with MDT there comes a database. That one can run on either full SQL or SQL Express. For you, that runs Config Manager. just add that database to the same instance as you run config manager on, because you get the license to do so. So then you can run the full SQL. For you that are not using config manager, there is no point of buying full SQL to have an OSD database. Get SQL Server Express. Even if you have tens of thousands of computers, that database is going to be a few hundred megabytes in size. And it's only being used when you actually deploy a computer. And I have met few customers who deploy more than 100 machines at the same time. There is no load from that at all. So you don't have to worry about putting that on the same instance as your config manager server. If you do profiling on it, it will be using like 0.0001% of the SQL capacity, whereas config manager will take the rest. So no worries there. If you do decide to run it on another than the default instance, or if you're running SQL Express, which by default has its own instance, you need to enable the browser service. You need to open the firewall, not only 1433 TCP, but also 1434 UDP. Otherwise, you will see that it cannot connect back to it. So, how do we do this? Well, if we ask you a question during this session, and you don't really know the answer, if you guess rules, which is just the name for that ini file, you are very likely to be correct, because that's where we do the most of the customizations. So to talk to a database, well, I do rules. So I have an ini file to which I have added really complex operations here, because I added about 7 lines of text into it, where I tell it to connect to this SQL server, connect to that database, connect using that protocol, named pipes, use a logs folder or a share to do a net use so that you can use trusted connections, and then query this view. Table is view in this scenario. And adding a few lines like this into a text file will actually tell the integration components to construct a SQL connection in the background, to build a select query that will ask this table for information that belongs to this machine. So on my server, in the database, let me see what server I actually connected to, otherwise this will be an embarrassing demo, CMO1. Helps if you open up the right database. Luckily, I found out before.
Lucky you.
Lucky me. So the database is by default managed by the deployment workbench. I don't like it one bit, but that's the default behavior. So you just allow me to start it. So in my database node here, I have added a machine. I've added a machine based on MAC address. And based on that MAC address, I have put some information about that machine into the database. For example, I have put in a computer name. And this machine here, with that MAC address, has a different computer name. Okay. So when I run this, if I go to my client here and run the simulation, you can actually see it's constructing a SQL query to connect and read a database information for a machine entry. And then it will populate that information. Now, it actually read a different table, so you will see it's responding with PC, I think it was 83 in this case. Select star. No, not that one. Here we go. This is where you can see it's actually creating a SQL query. And the result from that SQL query is one record, the OS install flag and the computer name that is being read from the database. Now, if you don't want to use the default UI, what you actually can download is a tool from CodePlex. It's called the MDT Admin. So let me just start it because it takes a while to start on the right server. Here we go. It's just an HDA compiled into an XE, but on CodePlex you can actually download the code. So if you go to CodePlex, mdtadmin.codeplex.com, you can actually download this UI. I was working with a customer back in Sweden not too long ago, and I saw them using this interface to manage the information in MDT database. And after using it for a while, I said, hey, this is pretty cool. This is way better than the workbench. How about you publish that to the community for free? And they said, let me think about it. The next day, it was there, using a public license so that you can play around with it. So I simply connect, and now I can manage my machines in here, add new computers, edit computers, and you can tie computers to a role. So I can say that this machine has the following roles. And in the database, I can actually do roles. I can create a standard PC role. In that role, I say that, for example, the OU should be one thing. The domain should be one thing. The org name should be one thing. I can add in applications. Config manager applications or light touch applications. I can add in config manager packages. So I'm just using a role to group settings together. And then I will go to a machine, one or more, and I will connect it to a role. So this is how you can assign lists of apps to computers. And the only thing you need to do to get this working is go back to your ini file and add more entries to it, to go ahead and ask for roles, to go ahead and ask for packet bus in those roles, to go ahead and ask for applications in those roles. So by simply editing a text file, yes, sir? I can do the same thing with make and model, yes, absolutely.
But Johan, sometimes customer asks us, well, doesn't configuration manager like contain a database? Why don't we populate that database? Why do we add another database? I can do pretty much the same in the configuration manager database too.
Well, the config manager database is, I would argue and say, very limited in what ready-made fields it has for OSD information. And I know you can use, you know, collection properties, variables, and resource variables, but there is no real database used for this, and you are actually not allowed to modify the config manager database. But this one you are allowed to modify. So if you fire up SQL Management Studio, you can do magic in the MDT database. If you're running it on the same instance as config manager, it's very easy to create links and views into the config manager database to actually read additional information. So one thing that I like to use this one for is, for example, to generate computer names. So in my MDT database, I can actually add a store procedure. You can download this one from my blog as well. It's called Identify Computer. And that's a simple process that if you download this and enable it, it will name your machines from a prefix plus a sequence number. And then the database will keep track of names it already handed out to machines. So the first machine would be, like my example, PC83, and next one will be PC84, and so forth. So I'm just adding additional logic into the database, something I could not do to the config manager database. And calling a store procedure is massively tricky because I actually need to open up the ini file. And I need to tell it to execute the stored procedure.
Yeah. We have a three-day training class on that particular subject.
Yeah, editing this text file here.
Yeah, we spend 2 days on the first two lines and second day on the last lines, and then we repeat it the third day.
Yeah. Yeah. Or you download the ready-made samples and play with them. Pick
yeah,
one.
That works too.
All right. So, what else can we do, Michael?
We can do a lot of things. John showed you about the database, and the task sequence is, of course, controlled by things that happens in custom-settings.ini. Before I answer that question, there was something popping up on the Twitter feed that says, what is the best way to distribute large files or applications to multiple stations? Can you multicast app files in a post-OS task? I know how to do this because I have deployed an internet cafe with 450 machines, and the average size of the image and application is about 380 gigs. And I was forced to redeploy them within 24 hours. Now, downloading from a file share doesn't work. We tried that. So anybody has any idea what we used? BitTorrent. We used BitTorrent, and that was the fastest way. We tried every other method. We split the application in two and downloaded the entire application store using Torrent. The first 40 machines is pretty average in speed, but then it picks up. You can also use the switches as emergency exit lights when you are doing this, because everything goes light.
So if you have really massive amount of data that you actually need to deploy, you can actually use Torrent technology to do that. If you only have smaller apps, we were working with an airline, and that app package was only 18 gigs in size. That's still a large package anyway. So we use the WDS MCAST XE client, which is available in WinP,
yep,
to request that file from a multicast namespace. But it actually works better to do it in WinP than after the OS is installed. So we do it pre-OS rather than post-OS. So at the same time as we apply the image, we simply call that client and say, hey, get the files as well using multicast and stage them on the drive. And if you search for WDS MCAST XE and my last name, you will find a step-by-step article on my blog that allow you to, or my old blog, I should say. I used to have a blog that was named Deploy Vista because I thought it was a good name to have in...
At that time.
Now it's an archive, so I don't use it anymore, but all the old articles still exist there.
So one of the things that we might want to do is that we need to extend the gather process. We need to gather anything else.
Would you like to have the...
Yes, please, if you just switch over to my screen. So, for instance, in this case, if we check this machine, it says the name of the machine is Virtual Machine and the vendor is Microsoft Corporation. That's fine. Now, if I run Virtual PC, Virtual Server, Hyper-V, any version, it's always going to be called Virtual Machine and Microsoft Corporation. Now, let's assume that I want to make sure that I have the latest and the greatest version of the integration components on my virtual machine. Well, that's going to be tricky because I have no idea what version of the hypervisor it's running. So we can't really use make and model. What we can use is instead the BIOS version. But that gets tricky because then you need to query with inside all the task sequences to figure that out, and you're going to end up with the customized task sequence that is horrible. So instead of doing that, you can run something called a user exit script. A user exit script is a VB script that jumps out, runs the script, and returns whatever value and fill that as a property. So if we check how this looks like, I go into my samples, and I see I have something called a user exit alias. In this case, it's going to do a priority of hardware info, make alias, model alias, SM BIOS version via version, default, and ZOSD. Now, the first exit, the first section here is called hardware info. It could be named anything. In this case, it runs something called alias user exit.vbs. Then it's going to run the function within that VB script that is called setMakeAlias, setModelAlias, setSMBiasVersion, and setMacAlias. And that's going to return those values into userExitMakeAlias, ModelAlias, and so on. And therefore, depending on what machine I'm running on, I'm going to get different results. So in this case, I can actually use the BIOS version of that machine and condense that into a string. So if I'm running on a special machine, that will return the 68CVDVER F22, which is a condensed version of the BIOS version of an EliteBook 8540, which would result in you need to install that application because that BIOS doesn't work with it. So you could either do things like the Hyper-V versions and things like that. So to run a user exit script, you only need to define it. You also need to have the user exit script by itself. And as we told you before, if you go to the download for the custom-settings.ini file, you will have that file, the user exit file, inside. And this is just a VB script. And I'm not a VB script expert coder, but it's not that hard to understand.
You have a friend that is.
I have a friend that is. It's not really that hard. It's going to run the function setMakeAlias, which basically you're going to do a select case, and we read the values, in this case, the make, from the custom-settings.ini collection or the gather process. So if it's a Dell computer, Dell Inc., Dell Computer Corp. dot, it's going to switch that name into being just a Dell.
So we use it to normalize the information that we retrieve through the hardware gathering process. So, for example, for Lenovo, it will give you back a real model name, not just that 7-digit number.
For it's so lovely to have the Matashita Electric Industrial Company
dot comma.
It's a Panasonic. Can we just agree upon that? It's just a Panasonic, okay? So the question is, where can you find it? If you go to Deployment Bunny and search for custom-settings.ini and you download one of those sample files, it's included. So if we go down to making and to the model specific, we're going to read in that information too. And let's say we go down to Lenovo. Lenovo has an exciting way of describing the name of the computer or the model. They use 7 characters. For the first 4 is actually the model specification, and the 3 last is the assembly code, meaning that you can have 45 Lenovos of the same model, just have 45 different numbers, because they are assembled in different countries with different keyboards. That doesn't affect us from a driver perspective.
Of course you need a different driver if the label on that key over there is Norwegian.
Yeah. So in this case, we can change the name like this. I think IBM also has a really nice thing. They, on the server side, that is the model name.
You know, that guy has been doing BBSs for a long time because...
Yeah, that's someone that works in the hardware coding stuff, and he wants to be in marketing, but he couldn't make it, so he thinks that --HS22 --- is really good. Now, try to put that in a path. Samsung have a couple of models with a backslash in the computer name.
That'll work.
Yeah. Really nice. So if we run this, which we, of course, can do, we can get it translated. So instead of using that file, let's go settings for user exit. And see what this turns into be instead. So the question is there any plans to use to shift in the user exit to be a PowerShell script? Today, no. In the future, it might, as long as the major part of MDT is based on VB script, because they still need to support XP. So I would guess, because I don't work in the team, but I would guess the same day that XP ends, then they can shift into doing PowerShell all over the place.
But Config Manager and LightChat still support you to call PowerShell script, and I actually know that Michael has an example of that.
Yeah. So here you can see that I'm actually switching to use a model alias for that, and the make alias is going to be Microsoft. So I can really start using model alias and make alias instead of using model, which is not going to be very useful. So Another thing you can do is to, of course, run the PowerShell script within inside the task sequence. So in this case, I have a very boring task sequence that runs a very boring PowerShell script. Now, the beauty of running VB script and PowerShell script within a task sequence or within custom-settings.ini is that we can steal the environment. The entire TSENV environment is easy to move over. So if we check that script and go into the scripts folder, and let's find the demo. There you go. And we open that with something fast, like Notepad. You can see it is actually stealing the $TSENV colon, OSD computer name, make, and model. So you can steal those, make them PowerShell variables, and then you can use and play around with them with inside, and you don't really need to do anything else. The thing you have in script location and script file is my invocation and command path parent. We use those to extract the file name and the location where the script actually is running from. So if you need to, within side, access the location for other files, maybe like an installer or something, it's easy to find its way back. So if we run that.
And this is the same for Config Manager, the same option.
Yeah. So you need to run the, because we run it in the sequence, it's not that hard. And the thing is that even if we do, at least if I do configuration manager things, I first try them in Light Touch because Light Touch is faster to play around with. I can verify that everything works, at least, you know, the basic stuff. When it works, then I can move over and do it in the real environment instead.
So Light Touch allows you to very quickly run through it and verify it works, whereas in Config Manager, every time you do a change into a script, guess what? You need to update that package, rerun the sequence, and that takes like 5 minutes.
And you can see it's returning the running script. The make is now Microsoft Corporation, of course, the virtual machine, and then, of course, we need to add the waiting at 99% just because we can, because everybody is waiting in the end of entry script. So that means the script is done. So that is a way to run PowerShell script within side a sequence. Shoot. Next up.
All right. So, yeah, you did that.
Yeah, we did that.
When using a database, you will have all your clients, when you deploy them, they will actually reach out to that database, read some settings, and then continue the, well, deployment using those settings. Now, what if you want to go beyond databases? Well, then we have web services. And I'm now about to demonstrate my extreme skills in Microsoft Paint. So imagine I have two sites here that are connected with a link, a 4 megabit link of some kind. I have my...
I was about to say IP over AVN carriers, but... That's might be too slow, right?
A little bit too slow. I have a distribution point up here, and I also have a database up here, and the database is supposed to look like, I can do this. A little bit impressed, right? Now, I have a client here now in the branch office. And so I have a central site, my headquarters, and I have the branch office down here. I'm going to deploy this client. Now, in Config Manager, when you start to do Windows 7 and Windows 8 projects, you quickly realize that, well, the images are quite big. So an image can be easily 4 or 5 gigs in size. So you guys really need to find one way or another to put content closer to the client. So normally that means you will add additional distribution points that are closer to the clients, so that you only replicate the image once over the wire instead of every single time a client requests it. But now, the client will actually still, when I start the deployment, it will get the sequence from the management point, it will get the data from the local DP, but it will actually reach out to the database in real time and request the settings, and then these settings will be returned back to the client and it will be used. If you drive behind the scenes, if you look into a sequence, and this is same in LightTouch and Config Manager, first, there is a gather action happening. It's happening quite early in the sequence. That action simply reads the CSINI file, and it will store those variables that we have been showing you in memory and also on an encrypted file on the disk. For Config Manager in LightTouch, it's clear text. In Config Manager, it's encrypted. Then, later on, there is a configure action. That configure action will do two things. One, it will actually copy the unattended XML template from the server down to the client, to the C drive. Different folders depending on LightTouch and Config Manager, but it will copy that template down. And then it will simply update the local unattended file. So this means that if your INI file, through a database connection, figured out that the computer name is supposed to be PC83, it will be the configure action that actually injects PC83 into the local unattended XML file, and then later setup or the mini setup will kick in and use the now updated unattended XML file. So this we can troubleshoot through simply running that simulation gather by running the CDI gather script that we have been showing you. This is the actual script that does the job. This one we can troubleshoot by looking into the config manager CDI configure.log script, file. And this one we can troubleshoot through looking into the setup act log file, of course. But this is what's going on in the background. Now, if I go back to my here, I mentioned that the protocol was that was being used was named pipes. Is this a brand new protocol? It's been around for a while, like a really long time. So how much data is going to travel across the wire when my client runs the gather step that will request settings from the database? Do you have any ideas? Roughly a megabyte or so. Now, what if this was not 4 megabyte, but 0.4 megabyte link? Or it could be a 4 megabit line, but it was heavily used, so the end result is the same. And what if my response times are starting to grow over this, which if you have that on average, this is not a very good link. I can tell you named pipes will fail. It will not be able to make that connection. And I know you can increase the connection timeout string. If you work with the databases, you know that. Will it help? No. The solution is to add another protocol into the business, and that is to use web services. Web applications that we run on the server side, the client talks to the web application. The web application talks to the database or to something else. Your asset management system, Active Directory, Config Manager, whatever you like to talk it to, and then the web service returns the value to the client. Now, what protocol is being used now? HTTP. How much data is going to be carried over? 10% or so. So maybe 0.1 megabyte. And now since we have managed code running server side, we can do really cool stuff. So how do you configure Config Manager or LightTouch to actually query a web service? The answer is rules. Thank you. I think we're out of t-shirts.
Yeah. And you don't want to have my shirt.
No. All right. So it's really complex because you need to open this INI file of yours, and you actually need to type in the link to the web service. And you need to type it correctly because it's picky about spelling. That's it. So if I go to my server, I can simulate the data I would get from a web service. So if I open a browser, and run that web service interactively, I can actually test my methods that I have. So for example, I have one method here that will get me roles, meaning the roles from the database. And I can test it. It will return an XML file with the roles I have. Okay, check. There is one that will reach out into Active Directory in real time and give me a list of OUs back in an XML file. And MDT knows how to read this. This is just for testing. Sorry? No, depends on the sorting order that you have. You may have different results, yes. But that's something you can control in either the web service, but also the parsing mechanism on the client. This one, for example, will list me available sequences in Config Manager, or in fact, collections that has a sequence deployed to them, required deployment. Now I can take this to the client and I can test this, and I can actually take the light touch wizard that Michael was using before to test his, let me close this one, to test his PowerShell script. I can use that with Config Manager. So this HDA is using web service in the background to read out the computer name, to give me the available roles that will in turn configure the application lists and other settings. It will list me the OUs from Active Directory, and it will give me a list of collections to which I have a targeted deployment in Config Manager. And when I click Finish, this one will actually call another web service that will add this machine to the collection. And then the deployment starts. So instead of going to the Config Manager console and add a machine to a collection, by using a web service, I can actually, if you want to, do that from the client side. If you don't want to write your own web services, because, I mean, this is more or less opening up Visual Studio and doing something, you can, in fact, go to CodePlex. You can go to this site, which has an older version, but it includes the source code for the web services. And it's much easier to start with something that actually works and modify it than to start coding from scratch. Then we have a fellow in Germany, Mike Koster, is an MVP as well. He has written some 150-plus ready-made methods that you can download and use. And they are organized into MDT database stuff, Config Manager stuff, Active Directory stuff, and Config Manager client stuff. And for example, if I go to the Active Directory one, why not call this one? That will add a computer to a group. You may have deployments targeted to a group, and now you can add your computer to one or more groups. There is one that I use a lot, this one, that will move a machine from one OU to another. It could be that you have a staging OU where you deploy the machines, but in the end, you would like to move it somewhere else. That's something you can call a web service that does. And again, adding one of those to Config Manager or to LightTouch, find a web server, find the site in question, right-click and say Add Application. And then you point them to the actual web service. If you want to have more secure environments, you can configure a web application to use specific application pool. And that specific application pool, if I go to Advanced Settings, I have configured to use a specific service account. And I have granted the necessary permissions in Active Directory and Config Manager for this service account only. So not only can I run code on the server side, it's more secure as well. And you can start do things that is not possible. But what if you don't like Visual Studio? I wouldn't mention any names, but...
There's nothing wrong with Visual Studio. Just, you know, So with System-Centered 2012 SP1, you might have access to Orchestrator. Orchestrator has the ability to do runbooks. Runbooks works pretty much the same way as a web service. It's pretty much like playing with Lego instead. I don't need to code. It's about drag and drop and picking the values between each other. But we use it for the same purpose. I don't want to run code on this deployment. I want to run it on the server side. So if you flip over to my demo screen, I can show people how this works. So in this case, I do have a simple runbook. This is called Enable Backup for VIP Computers. It accepts some kind of in data. In this case, a group called VIP Computer Group, together with something called OSD Computer Name, which just happens to be the same as MDT is using. We take those values, and then we run the Get Active Directory Group with a filter that says if the SAM account happens to match the VIP computer name, try to find if the computer is a member of that group. If that is true, then I guess we're going to have the count equals one returned back. Therefore, we're going to return the value of computer backup location auto. This way, if a technician runs a refresh of a machine, and that machine is a member of that particular group, a backup will occur. If it's not a member of that group, no backup will occur. And we don't need to hand it over to the techie guy at the local site to make that decision. We decided by putting in the machine in a group. We also have the capability, of course, to move the machine. Let's say that you do Configuration Manager after the deployment has been done. Move the computer to that particular group. Or move the machine to another location. Let's assume that you have the, I want to refresh the machine. Move it to a stage OU. When you're done, move it back. Or you want to be notified when the machine has been deployed. Or you want to do a replace when you do a cleanup. I'm replacing the machine, therefore the machine account should be disabled and moved to a Boneyard OU so that account cannot be used.
Do you still have your Twitter thing left intact, that runbook?
Yes. So this is the one of the awkward ones. It's actually going to receive information from the runbook. It's going to pick the task sequence name, computer name, things like that. And we send that on to a text file, so we have a logging mechanism to actually store that. And then, of course, we tweet it.
So that's why you saw this morning in the Twitter feed that Michael was deploying machines in his lab in the hotel room, because he was testing the runbooks.
So if we flip over to MDT and we open the, let's go into the notify DM. I'm not going to do an entire deployment. We're just going to do the basic stuff like gathering, setting the finish action to none, and then we execute the runbook. And as you see, the only thing I need to do is browse to the server and then select my runbook, and it will automatically feed in this value. And if we run this...
And this is the same in Config Manager too.
Yeah. I guess it's going to Twitter.
So we've been thinking about extending this to also have a help desk application. When someone resets the password, we simply tweet it.
Yeah, so then everybody knows, and everybody can help, and that makes it much faster. Yeah, I think that's a really smart thing. So let's do the notify. Let's do next. If you do have values that get returned back, MDT or the task sequence automatically consumes them. So it's pretty much like a web service. If you say that whatever value should be returned back, it's automatically going to be returned back and correctly populated as a property and a value in MDT. And if this works, oh, it's so darn...
PC556 is deployed using Windows 8.1 x64 notify DMO. It's on Twitter.
Yeah. So it just works then. which means it's very nice. I mean, it's like very
you
convenient.
You forgot the hashtag.
Did I? Yeah, it's correct.
Yeah, I was being there. Sorry, I didn't see it.
And I just added 8.1 to make people a bit more, what? Are they doing that in that session? No, we're not doing 8.1. But it's, someone will run in after a while and say, you're not supposed to do that. And we are not. It's just a sequence. So you can extend it either using web services or, of course, using this. Most of these runbooks are available for download. If you go to deploymentbunny.com, you will see some of them. I hadn't added them all. It's a project. Next week is going to be vacations. So I'm going to try to work as much as I can, of course, to upload everything. So the question is, do the runbook has the same speed and performance as... Yeah, so it is a web services. A runbook is a web services. The difference between a web services and a native runbook is that the runbook can only be run within a task sequence. A web services can be run and executed from a web services. However, that is almost true because you can actually run a web services call directly to an orchestrated runbook server too. It's just that it needs to be formatted differently. So if I really need to, I can run it. But it's the same technique. It works pretty much the same.
I mean, if you do have licenses for Orchestrator, and the stuff that you want to do is already available as functions and activities in Orchestrator, why start writing code when you have something that already is working and tested and supported? I would be totally fine with developing web services if I don't have Orchestrator, or if the function that I want to do in Orchestrator is not easy to do or available. I would like to show you a pretty cool freeware thing, an end-user portal that you can download to test and run web services, runbooks, yeah, directly from a web page. This is pretty cool. Doesn't cost you a dime, but it allows you to do stuff that Michael did in the sequence by simply going to a web page. Now, if you want to learn more, there are resources out there. You will find me and Michael in the book signing store, or in the bookstore at Tech Ed for book signing at 1 o'clock today, 1 p.m. So if you just want to chat with us, it's free to come as well. These are all available in the Tech Ed bookstore. And they all come with a really large set of sample scripts that are not available elsewhere. So some of them we posted, some of them are only part of this thing. And there are also Kindle versions available. So we are told, requested strongly, to encourage you to please fill in the evaluations. Here we go, because you can win stuff. And as always, always, always the same, be honest but gentle. And thank you so much for taking your time.
Thank you.